You could have been anywhere else right now, but you decided to choose this podcast to listen to. Let me say this. My name is Antonio Laborte, the host of the show. Thank you guys so much. If you do tune in, if you have tuned in before, that you keep doing so, and it's greatly appreciated. And I love the support, and I love you guys for listening and following this whole thing. This is a new episode for you guys. I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting. I really appreciate it. All right, peace. So on 420 of this year, the Raiders posted a picture on Twitter that came after the verdict of Derek Chauvin that said the words, "I can breathe," right? Do y'all remember that picture? They posted that maybe, I think, the night of or the day after that, and they were getting pushed back on that. After 6 months, I went and checked. After 6 months, it's still there. Like, that picture's still there. They didn't take it down or anything like that. And I say that to kind of just give you, like, a little preface of just how ridiculous all this is. But on Friday, news surfaced about emails that were sent over a 10-year span by John Gruden that made a comment about the executive director of the Players Union, Damaris Smith. And these comments were, they spoke about the size of his lips, pretty much. A New York Times report on Monday came out about further highlighting Gruden's history of making racist, sexist, homophobic comments regarding the NFL. The article states, in quote, "Over a 7-year period in which Gruden used misogynistic and anti-LGBTQ language, quote, casually and frequently, end quote, and rebuked major developments in the sport, such as gay players being drafted, women officials and players demonstrating against racial injustice during the national anthem," end quote. John Gruden is one of many Americans who find pleasure in throwing jabs at other groups of people in the comfort of spaces that they know others may not be quick to challenge them in. He just happens to be a well-known coach in a league that is perhaps one of the most important sports organizations in the world, certainly in this country. And when I was kind of reading about different things and different angles about what this story is and how they came to find these emails and different connections that other reporters and investigators are making as far as the other misconduct in the league, an interesting article came out Monday by, I think her name is Jenny Vrentas, I want to say, for Sports Illustrated, where she raises an interesting point about the way that the Gruden investigation is being handled and how the Washington football team's issues were being handled earlier in the summer. I'll speak on two quotes within the article, but essentially, Jenny is asking for the league to be as transparent and open about everything entailing the Washington football team misconduct as they have with Gruden and the Raiders. Okay, here's the two quotes from the SI article. The first one: "Gruden's emails evoked a visceral reaction. They were difficult to read. Their public release required Gruden to face consequences. These developments should also compel the league to make public the specifics of the toxic work environment in Washington." The second quote: "The NFL fined the Washington club $10 million for creating a workplace culture permeated with bullying, intimidation, and harassment while Snyder was the owner. His family was not forced to sell the team, though, and Snyder was simply shelved for a while as his wife Tanya was tasked with taking on the day-to-day operations for at least, quote, the next several months." When I was watching Sunday Night Football, the rain delay that they had was almost a blessing in disguise because it forced some of the commentators to keep the time rolling and be actively reporting on something. And Mike Tirico, being an expert in tap dancing, made a comment about John and how, in his eyes, there wasn't anything that led him to believe that he was a bad guy. And he sort of doubled down on the statement on the WFAN Sports Radio. He said, Tirico said this. He said, "I should weigh in a little bit here because I was with John at the time. 7 years as my partner on Monday Night Football. I probably know John better than anyone in the league on a personal level. He said already that he was ashamed by the comments in the email. The comments in the email are wrong, but my experience kind of parallels Tim Brown, who played for John and is a Hall of Fame receiver. He said he never experienced or saw anything that would say John was racist in any way. That is exactly the experience I had in 7 years of traveling, 3 days together on the road every week. And so this is the not my experience, so not my call, or not my experience, so it must not be true line of reasoning. And I don't want to make this about Tirico, because it's not even so much about him specifically, but about a common trope that we see in individuals upholding abusive or damaging behaviors. We'll see this kind of thing said when you get dudes sticking up for their dog who they know is like predatorial, you know, and the same thing goes for these motherfuckers who are out here putting their neck out for them, those white folks, to try and be a figure for like a saving grace or whatever. I'm assuming it's them maybe looking out for their own paycheck, leading with the white man do no harm approach so that they don't get brought down in this somehow. Because you know, you come out here saying, hey, white man did wrong, you'll probably get your job, you'll probably lose your job faster than the white man who actually did something wrong, right? And this same year, we had Richard Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins give the same I know deep down who they really are speech for Rachel Nichols. Granted, her exact words weren't as jarring and offensive as Gruden's was, but the same backwards mindset was like thwarted by niggas who wanted to come save another white person from slipping on the banana peel, essentially. Jon Gruden deserves to face consequences for his actions, just like everyone else at any other time. And you might think, but these comments were made 10 years ago, or how is it fair to penalize him for something that happened last decade? There's two reasons for that. Number one, Jon Gruden, 10 years ago, was at the ripe young age of 48. So it's not like this is a case where this happened and he was a teenager and maybe, just maybe, you can give a bit of leniency to the comeuppance that comes his way. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, like he was and has been a full-grown adult for some time now. His level of thinking at 48 is pretty damn solidified. He knows what he said, why he said it, the way he wanted to say it, and couldn't give a damn about how it sounded because he thought he was saying that in a safe space with people who agreed with him and thought the same level of thinking that he had. Okay, number two, even if you wanted to make a case that things that long ago shouldn't be brought up, his actions are a reflection of the team and the league as a whole, regardless if he wants that to be the case. And so the team, although not so much persuaded by the racist comment, but I'll get to that a little bit later, felt as though that this evidence was enough to want to separate from him to further any damage it can do to the locker room and the play on the field, which is the cover story page. That excuse is for the cover story. The real concern with getting rid of Gruden is because they didn't want Gruden to be the reason why they would plummet in profit margins for that team, and that right there is a big no-no. The minute that you start affecting the bottom line, they're going to get you out of there. It don't matter what kind of skin color you got. It don't matter what your ideals are. If they think that you're going to cost some cash, they're gonna send you on your way home. So personally, do I think that this circumstance is being handled correctly? I think reactionary outrage is more normal now than ever. I think we're in a state where the biggest news ever always happens today, and that stays true every day if you get what I'm putting down. And I think that those who are participants with a problematic story that have any type of governing power are forced to make even quicker decisions to try and remedy it, or they too will face the threat of public scrutiny. And I'm not calling for their sympathy. Like, I don't really give a damn. I'm just stating how the beginning, middle, and end is more swift for these kind of things. It no longer takes time to investigate. They want a decision to be made fast, and they want a specific kind of decision to be made. And people want to feel like they accomplished some sort of social or cultural dilemma anytime some occurrence of injustice rises up. They want to feel like they accomplished something. So am I personally outraged or disgusted or what have you? Nah, because it just doesn't surprise me. Like, his actions don't really, it's not a shock to me. Especially when I hear that a white person has done something racist. I tend to hold the rope when viewing the ideals of white America. And being race conscious isn't one of the things I expect the majority of them to practice and put into effect. And certainly not put into effect well. But listen, individuals are getting smarter at masking questionable personality traits, or behaviors, but not everyone is that savvy. Clearly, Gruden isn't savvy with it. Is he the only member in the league who's made similar retorts about race or gender and whatnot? Nah, a good chance that's not the case. He's just the one who couldn't get his hand out of the cookie jar fast enough. Or more appropriately, he wasn't meticulous about cleaning up the trail crumbs that he left behind him. You know what I'm saying? Like, Gruden getting fired, or should I say, you know, they say he got fired, but my belief is that Mark Davis let, he let Mark Davis let Gruden get a minor PR chip shot by calling it a resignation, excuse me. You know, it isn't a victory or an L or anything really. It's just a high profile name detailing the reality of our culture. Like Gruden getting fired isn't a win. It's just another comma to what we already see in daily life. I'll break down why the call for consequences irritates a considerable amount of people. Within our culture, there's a sort of an indoctrination to ideas that deal with certain nuances of race, gender, sexuality, other demographics. These nuances are presented either informationally, like in textbooks and publications and things like that, or they're done in terms of entertainment. So like things like news, you know, the media, television, sports, video games, whatever, right? And the pretty much the nuances are two different mediums. Unless they're purposely blocked and derailed through things like adult supervision, children are gathering ideas about all these different things about humanity, specifically those demographics, from a variety of different places. And sometimes the adult supervision themselves is circumventing these ideas as well. Some of these places provide vulgar, unfiltered, explicit ideas. And some are done with the intent to be thoughtful and careful about the messaging they put out. And some just don't give a damn. Right? But all of this leads back to the ways that we come to speak about ourselves and others and how we define what is okay and what is not okay to say. And certainly in this country, the cap is often taken off the bottle and anything goes. Right? We are not the country known for thoughtful rhetoric about groups who are not the spitting image of what America is representative of. And so often the punchline comes in the form of an uppercut. And the setup is years of kids getting fed a wide range of ideals about what is said about one another. And they may go act out what they see as young kids. And some may carry it with them. Some may learn to turn it off and on at times, right? Some of them may be a little bit better at hiding it. And others may actually try to dislearn and relearn as they age. But the fear in many people's minds is that the behavior they engage in as a child or a teenager may have real-world implications today as if it didn't when they were younger. That's the confusion that they're making. It's this fear that my childish ways will suddenly make me the enemy at my local church or my kid's sports league or at the office or whatever. And many people hold this fear because that was their reality. They were 8, 10, 12 years old, 16 years old, going around using slurs or being sexist and whatnot. And instead of reckoning with that or choosing to be adults and accept the consequences as they seem fit and really trying to be a better person and live by that, they would rather attack the systems that look to snuff this shit out than face the reality that we're participating in right now, right? And rather than face the reality that they were participating in this much bigger problem. Gruden, to many of these people, are younger versions of themselves or maybe versions of themselves now. They're aware that they said or did things that would get called out like this. And instead of helping to make an environment where change does exist and our words and actions mean something, which then in turn means that the consequences for words and actions mean something, it suddenly turns into, well, everyone is soft now. The world gets so offended easily. I guess jokes aren't a thing anymore. Because again, those people want to live in a world where there's aspects to their existence that they don't have to consciously consider. They don't want to have to be thoughtful or considerate at all times of the day. They'd much rather lean into, you know, that reactionary side that feeds some inner need to just let loose. Like, they don't want to have to think about, they just want to be able to speak about things freely. You know what I mean? Like, they want to be unfiltered and uncensored, regardless of what that unfiltered self means in the eyes of other people. Because why should I have to give a fuck when I'm sure there's other people who also want to be as careless and as inconsiderate as me? They fear a world where that comes to light and costs them from having their cake and eating it too. Right? They want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to be able to say whatever they want and then not have to deal with that later on. I hate to break it to all of you who want it both ways, but that does not happen. It is certainly not going to happen today. In this climate, you will not be able to get your cake and eat it too. And by the way, like, I want to, the bottom line is, please feel free to say and do absolutely whatever it is that your heart desires. Just know what comes with that. Just be an adult and understand that if you want to go act that way, go act that way. But there's going to be consequences to that. That's the bottom line. If you get caught, be like, yeah, I got caught. Right? Stand on that shit. All that bitching and whining when someone does something about it lets everyone know that you're a child who can't accept that the world works in this way. You do something, something is done back. It's that simple. And if you want, feel free to take it up with the wham-wham police. The wham-wham police are trained in this kind of thing. They'll take your complaints. They'll take your bitching. Like, if you get caught with your hand in the jar, bro, don't go pointing in the other direction. Like, whoa, wait a minute. That's because it's their fault. Like, nah, bro, you got caught. It's that simple, man. It's that simple. Listen, do what you want to do, right? I'm not here to play Jesus to everybody. I'm not going to go into everybody home and be like, hey, make sure you're doing the right thing. Nah, you want to do the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. But know what comes with that. Know that there's consequences. You get caught, hey, shit sucks, right? maybe it'll convince you to do the right thing next time. You would think, right? I didn't include this in the last segment, but after thinking about it for a little bit, I wanted to include it because I thought it was important to even, you know, discuss this part too. Outside of wanting to investigate what Gruden's actions means for the league and what it tells us about the American population, outside of those two things, the third question that you have to ask is, do consequences stick for these people? Does it really hold effect for as long as you would like it to? And I was playing with the idea, and I was speaking to a few other people about this. You know, what happens next for Gruden? Is this just a temporary sort of, listen, because it's in the headlines today, right? It's the biggest problem today. You know, they have to take action. They take action swift. But the general population tends to forget about the issues, and they even are quicker to forgive. And when I say general population, I'm really kind of thinking of white America here. But this holds true for even everybody, you know, depending on who it is that we're looking at, you know, who got canceled or who got fired for saying whatever it was that they were saying or the misconduct or whatever, you know. But Gruden is the kind of individual who is held highly in certain spaces. And I wouldn't necessarily, you know, throw out the idea that he will never return. Especially in that league, I think he's somebody who can still re-enter when, you know, the dust clears and people are focused on a different thing. Remember, we were up in arms. I don't want to say we because I don't know who really cared or not. But I remember when the Deshaun Watson news first broke, and that was like the big thing for several months. And then even going further past that, you had the thing with Richard Sherman. And then before that, you had Antonio Brown and all of those players. Well, not Deshaun Watson, but, you know, you Antonio Brown and Richard Sherman found their way back into the league. They're on an NFL team. And I know I don't want to use the word narrative, but, you know, the story of Antonio Brown up to this point, depending on who you ask, they're not even thinking about the stuff that he was getting put in the news for. You know what I mean? So. And that's a player, well, that is a black player, not even somebody who's a coach or a higher-up personnel. So if you ask me if Gruden has the ability to get a job in the league again, I don't put it past him. You know, I think this is a situation where, you know, Mark Davis had to make a quick decision. Because the league didn't look like they were going to make a decision. So Mark Davis had to make that decision pretty quickly. But, you know, when the dust clears and everything's settled and people kind of move on and they sort of forget, it's no longer in their active memory. I can see John Gruden back in the league doing whatever. He may not be a coach, but he may be working on the analytics side, or I'm sorry, on the analysis side or what have you. But, you know, the thing with these people is that, you know, again, if it's the most active newsworthy story at the moment, then it's the biggest issue in the world. But there will always be something new tomorrow that that is so important that it takes the attention off of everything else that already occurred. And so for Gruden, what he needs to do is to be able to lay low and hope that his little connection within the league can, you know, will know the right thing to do. And when I say right thing to do, I mean the right thing to do to get him back in the league. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do ethically or morally, but they know what the right procedures are to wait this thing out and sort of, you know, wait until people are not up in arms to kind of be like, hey, you know, come back in our sphere, you know, come back to the league. We have this role for you. We have this job for you, things like that. So I don't put it past him getting back in the league. I think maybe it'll take a year, if that, but I think a year or two. And we may see him back in the league, which sort of is like a big middle finger to this whole process that we're going through right now. But I mean, you know, it's not surprising given the circumstances, given the history. Like, he's not the first person that this would be applied to. So I don't put it past him to get back in the league whatsoever. Now, the other side to this week's controversy comes with Dave Chappelle and his yearly outrage whenever he drops a special. Now, Dave comes with a bit of a different lens that is much more intricate to try to dissect. And it requires some more assumptions to be made about his situation. I think this part of the conversation picks up well from where I left off on the Gruden case, where I said, you know, feel free to say and do absolutely whatever it is that your heart desires. Just know what comes with that. You know, and Dave is one of many people who has done that, where he's made, you know, his skits and he's done his jokes and he's poked at different groups of people. A lot are done on the lives of Black people. Some have, you know, some of those skits and jokes have brought in other races, and more recently have included ideas around, you know, gender and whatnot. Like, he's often referred to, you know, LGBTQ, that community, as the alphabet people. You know, he's made jokes about trans people, and you know, he recently made a jab at trans folks, saying that he sides with J.K. Rowling. Like, if she's a TERF, then I'm a TERF. You know what I'm saying? Like, where Dave runs into problems, or at least where I think he does, is that there's been moments where he also asks for people to not be as soft or offended by his jokes, rather than just getting the joke off. Like, and letting his audience get their laugh in, you know, letting his group of people get their laughs in, let him get his laugh in, and just call it a day. Clearly, comedians are in a bit of a more sheltered space within their profession as far as what happens, like, when they tell these jokes. There's outsiders to those comedians, or perhaps just even outsiders to comedy in general, who still look to, you know, revoke specials or get them fired, or I guess I'll use the word cancel here. But there tends to be an understanding that comedians are the one profession where the social laws that are, you know, are still trying to be forced, but they just don't hold the same power. You know, they want comedians to still be, you know, race conscious or you know, conscious about the way that these things make people feel, you know. But ultimately, you know, comedy is comedy. You know, people are going to get these jokes off. They're going to try to test the limits and what have you. They can manipulate and play with the borders of what is, you know, socially acceptable and what isn't, and be praised for it depending on how big of a laugh it draws in. So Dave, being who he is, again, I don't know who he is as a person, right? I'm only assuming, I'm saying who Dave is as far as what his comedic space is and what I've seen through his, you know, his comedy specials and what have you. Dave is notoriously out there with his jokes and pushing the buttons on different, you know, social stuff and what have you. He's bound to run into people who push back on it, right? Like, and I think more importantly, he's bound to do things in a clever way, some things in a lousy way. Like, there's some jokes that he does that he gets off that are done and makes you go, ah, yeah, you know, that, like, you kind of, it's also a laugh, but it's a ha-ha moment. Like, yeah, I get the intricacies of that. And there's some times where he just makes jokes that are just lousy in nature. Like, it's just, like, low-hanging fruit, you know? And here's sort of, like, my take on the comedy sphere, and interpreting this too is such a fine line that you have to walk on, that I can't really try and like denounce other takes on, like, you know, what's comedy and what's a joke and what's acceptable and what's not, you know. But I'll give you mine. If you're going to come up with material about race, gender, sexuality, whatever it may be, for that joke to land clean, the trajectory of the joke needs to be an honest one.
right? So the way in which you tell the joke, it needs to be sort of like a reflection of society in a way, like a true reflection. All parts of it must be clever and well-crafted. So again, like the low-hanging fruit jokes or like the lousy put-together ones, like it just looks sloppy and it's just sort of like, you know, I guess you could use the word immature, even though I don't want to use that word, but like it's a childish joke, you know. And then the landing strip should always cater to the group that you're making the punchline about. It should, if you're going to make a joke about a certain group of people, then that group of people need to look at it and be able to laugh at it, you know, honestly, and not feel like, oh, this is like a weird kind of situation that we're in. I didn't plan on watching his special just because I'm not overly interested in the comedy of Dave more than I am interested in hearing him speak, like in a setting that, you know, doesn't require him to say things with the purpose of getting a laugh out of someone. I can enjoy his comedy, like I enjoy the Chappelle Show, but at this point I'm not looking to Dave for my laughter. I'm more so looking at different interviews that he's in and hearing his perspective, because he's a smart dude. Like he's a thoughtful dude. He is very intellectual, but at the same time, that there is instances where you could say, you know, maybe he just doesn't give a damn. Like he's aware of the situation, but he's then choosing to say, you know, fuck these different people, or I'm gonna go ahead and make this joke about these people. And I'm assuming, right, that regular Dave, you know, is more or less very similar than comedic Dave. And I think when he's not on stage, his line of thinking isn't rooted in trying to get a reaction out of you, but instead looking to reveal aspects of the world that he thinks about, which may be more thoughtful. Again, I don't know. I'm making these very grand assumptions. I'm trying to, you know, piece together what could be and what may not be. I'm just grasping at straws here, but I don't know this man. I'm not defending him, but I think that there could be something to take away from what he's doing that's outside of comedy too. And again, you know, before, you know, I did go ahead and watch it though, because I wanted to, you know, see what the whole issue was about with his special. And what it reminded me of was that it sort of is almost like an oppression Olympics. I'm not saying that he's trying to facilitate that or participate in it, but that's the general idea that came to my mind. I apologize if it's a little bit choppy when you get to this part of the podcast. I had a call come in, so it kind of disrupted the whole recording process. But I think I was talking about when I was watching the special, it reminded me the idea of certain like oppression Olympics, like, you know, black bodies. What America tells us is that black bodies are disposable, right? They have been for centuries. The plight of the person with dark skin is just not one that the white man or the white person wants to partake in. They just don't want to be involved with it, right? Any issues that go on with black people, or, you know, what have you, white people tend to sort of isolate themselves from that. Like, you know, they'll look at it and they may be more inclined to observe and pretend like they're a part of it, but they really, you know, they pick and choose when they want to enter it and then how they want to leave it. You know, he made a comment. So in that special, he made a comment about DaBaby. First of all, what DaBaby said is just dumb as fuck. Like, his show at Rolling Loud was not improved because he asked an out-of-pocket question that ain't got shit to do with shit. Like, you know, so for him to kind of include that, I mean, I'm not even going to really say that that's a big deal, because it's not, but it's almost like outside of the Dave thing, just kind of going to that part where, I don't even know how long was that, maybe a few months ago, right back in May. Like, you know, even with that whole thing, him taking back that apology, him even coming out with a fake apology in the first place, like, you know, there's no reason to even ask that question at that point, because it's like, what are you really even trying to do? I remember when that first came out, I was looking at that like, what does that got to do with nothing, bro? And you have to know, like, that those kinds of questions, like, people are going to look at you sideways like, yo, what is you even talking about right now? This ain't got nothing to do with your performance. Ain't got nothing to do with the show. You're going to ask some weird question that even makes you look kind of weird. Like, why are you even concerned with that? But anyway, you know, that was just an out-of-pocket thing. That's his own thing that needs to be discussed. But, and I think I brought this up earlier about the J.K. Rowling thing. J.K. Rowling is not the owner of the hill that you want to plant your flag near. You don't want to even go near that woman. You don't earn a W because you want to wear the same jersey as J.K. Rowling got on, you know? And to me, it was like, yo, you kind of player hating and joining a team, the J.K. Rowling team, that just because for the simple fact that she's hating on somebody else, and you want to subscribe to that, you want to be a part of that, like, that's whack. Like, you also a hater too. Like, you could have made a joke that was actually clever, but you wanted to just be like, I'm gonna side with this woman because she said this thing about these people, and she said some pretty, like, questionable things too about that group. And most of the motherfuckers listening to that special not even knowing what a TERF is. Like, he's like, if she's a TERF, I'm a TERF too. I had to look up what a TERF was. I'm like, I don't even know what he's talking about. Like, there were just different parts that just, to me, didn't really stick the landing, like I said before. And I can see why it comes with some eyebrow raising and what have you. Like, it was just, listen, it's a Dave special. His jokes, you know, he's gonna try to go to certain limits that maybe he shouldn't have, or maybe he should, and what have you. But with that special, it just didn't bring the laughs that I thought that it could, or that it should, or whatever. But listen, I think, again, Dave Chappelle is someone who is looking to say what he believes he needs to say and will do exactly what he wants to do. I think it's fair, and I'm going to get a little bit of a more broader view here. I think it's fair to bring up him leaving from comedy and how there may be some parallels to when he mentioned how the wrong laughs are directed toward you by people who you believe do not laugh alongside you, but instead above you. Like, his concern was he didn't know, he was looking at the laughter from certain demographics, specifically white people, and he thought that their laughter was done at him and not really because the joke was funny, more so because they thought, well, look at this nigger, you know, parade around, and oh yeah, that stereotype, oh, it's definitely true, yeah, we know that. And they're so, and sort of laughing at him mockingly, rather than enjoying his comedy routine. And perhaps there are viewers who feel as though Dave is now, this is a little bit of a stretch, but sort of maybe taking on that kind of role that he was once fearful of, you know, where he's orchestrating laughs intended to be above them rather than alongside them. I'm not making that connection. I'm sort of saying, okay, this happened with Dave, where he felt as though these jokes were being taken for and looking at in ways that he didn't think was appropriate. And so who's to say that other people don't feel that way about his comedy, where they're the punchline of the joke, where they're looking at Dave and they're like, well, okay, like, you know, there may be people who are open to the idea that, okay, yeah, we could take a joke, but this just wasn't funny. Like, they're just looking at that special going, yeah, he just didn't hit the mark there, and this seems more offensive or more critical than it is comedic. And so, you know, again, perhaps there's viewers who feel as though Dave is kind of creating this space where people can laugh at them and make them feel threatened rather than feel like they're a part of the group and we're all sharing this laughter about one another. And because I am not a part of that group that has showed their disappointment to him in this special, I won't, you know, stand out in front of them or drown out their voices or muffle them out. I don't know how they feel. I would have to go talk to certain people who maybe have seen the special. And even then, those specific people are not representative of a greater community. But, you know, with comedy, you're entering the space where, again, I think you have to have a polished routine for it to work. What you're trying to do, it needs to be honest, and it just needs, and to even get a little bit more simple, it just needs to be good. Like, it just, the jokes have to land, they have to be funny, and the intended group who you are making fun of needs to be able to laugh alongside it. And if that isn't the case, then maybe, if you care to reflect on it, then maybe you should. If not, then again, my thing was, do what you want to do, but keep it pushing then. Do what you want to do, but keep it pushing, and don't try to, again, don't try to have your cake and eat it too. Don't be sitting here making these jokes and then get mad when people don't find the shit funny, or they don't appreciate the way that you try to string those, you know, comedic lines together. And, you know, this is the last special that Dave has. I think he had a contract where he's supposed to do like 4 or 5 of these specials for Netflix. This is the last one. we may see him return. They may renew the contract. Netflix is already doing moves where, you know, they fired somebody. I didn't read too into it, so I don't want to get too involved with it, but I sort of read the headline where Netflix fired one of their workers for harsh criticism on that Dave special. So, I mean, it looks like Netflix is siding with Dave and they're riding with him, and I get that. But you know, it's just interesting. It's just interesting to see sort of two different approaches to this sort of, you know, where you have two high profile individuals making very racy or, you know, questionable social commentary within the same week. Like, that special came out on Netflix, I think maybe last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, and then this thing with Gruden coming out. You know, it's just crazy to think. It's crazy to think what, how this can all happen, you know, at one time, and then you have these two people who are now getting sort of criticized and looked at, and it sparks a bigger conversation from it. And kind of, I know this section is about Dave Chappelle, but I want to go back to Gruden just for a quick second before I wrap it up. I don't think that Gruden is the only person who's going to get sort of brought down in this. It can't be. You know, that investigation, the reason why those Gruden emails came out was because it was part of a much bigger operation, much bigger investigation that went on with the toxic culture at the Washington football team. You're telling me that John Gruden is the only individual who may have participated in or said things that are out of line? I don't think that's the case. Right, like he might be the biggest name, right? So maybe that's the only reason why his came out, but I don't think, and again, I don't know, I'm sort of making assumptions here, but I don't see how he's the only one who maybe was involved in that or was saying similar things. I don't know. I don't really know if they're gonna care. And when I say they, I'm talking about a few different people. The NFL, the Raiders, the general population. I don't know if they're gonna care long enough when this thing does fizzle out. Because it will fizzle out. Everything always does. It will always fizzle out. I don't know what's gonna happen with the Raiders. I don't know what's gonna happen with the league. If they're gonna even really want to pursue this further than the Wall Street Journal did. I don't know. I have no idea. What I do know is that the Raiders, the fact that you had, I think, what was his name, Carl Nassib, something like that, you know, he came out as openly gay maybe over the summer. I know it was just recently. The fact that he came out and they sort of like marketed him, you know what I mean, as like this progressive player on this team, and you see pictures of, you know, Gruden sort of embracing Nassib in that way, it just leaves a dirty taste in your mouth. And it's just like, you know, you have this person who, and then even with, there's videos of Keyshawn Johnson coming out here talking about, yeah, listen, this dude's not a good guy. He's a bad dude. I've been saying this for years and nobody's been listening to me. And it's like all this stuff now, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's, I feel bad for the Raiders. I feel bad for that organization, you know, having to sort of make this abrupt decision, then having this person in that locker room for so long, because who knows who just kept their mouth shut, who knows who just kind of put up with the shit, right? And who knows how much of an active role, who knows how well Gruden was hiding it, if he even cared to hide it with certain people, certain, you know, players in the locker room, what have you. So, I mean, it's tough. It's tough shit, man. So the next thing that I want to talk about, a little bit more of like a more overarching idea, is the idea of cancel culture. And at least for me, like when I look at cancel culture, I look at the two sides, the two groups of people who, you know, look at cancel culture and how they look at it differently, but how it's still, you know, a problem the way that they view it. So those who are angry at the idea of canceling somebody, right, and those who believe that there needs to be, I guess, these intelligent discussions, in terms of why someone should or shouldn't get canceled, that's what we need to talk about. That's who needs to be criticized, right? Not just the people who are mad at the cancel culture, but the ones who make it this sort of, you know, more deeper, more comprehensive behavior, I guess you could say, or, you know, practice, that it needs to be something that we really think about deeply on. which just, you know, I don't think that's the case. The people, basically the people mad at the people who are mad need to get a grip, right? The people who are mad at those who are pushing back on cancel culture need to relax. And then the people who are putting in like real hours into, I guess, creating what they believe is a compelling reason to rally around canceling somebody, they also need to get a grip, right? Just so we're all good on this. The concept of canceling somebody is not new. Like, this is not unprecedented, unprecedented stuff. Canceling somebody, you know, that act has been transformed and it's been passed down ever since we had the ability to form judgments about people. You know, we created a value system, and there were enough people around, right, to have a bit of diversity and who would uphold these values and who wouldn't. All canceling really is somebody not acting in ways that we think that they should. Sometimes what the person does is truly and objectively harmful, right, or just disgusting behavior. Sometimes their actions are questionable, and they're sort of walking that tightrope where, you know, yeah, you know, some people may be looking at it like, we need to get rid of that behavior. Sometimes, yeah, it just depends, like, the context matters. And other times we're splitting hairs about whether or not this person's actions are worth condemning. And canceling needs to be a personal choice. Like, we don't need to have mob action to try and gather up the townsfolks with pitchforks and tiki torches, going to people's homes, you know what I mean, and doing this sort of barbaric ritual. The internet is too wide a pool to try getting everybody to go all in on one single fish, for this example, especially because there could be other fish who look just like the ones you're trying to catch. There's too many people doing the same things where for you to want to rally around every single instance that occurs that you think is worth canceling somebody over. It's just too much work, and it takes too much time, and really it's not practical. And there might even be, to continue this example, there might be even bigger fish that people feel deserve, you know, more attention towards. You know what I mean? So, like, you're debating whether or not this person should be canceled, and it might be, like, again, it might be, you know, walking that tightrope where there's other people that it's clear-cut, obvious, like, yeah, these people are just not good members of society. And the reason, you know, nonetheless, canceling, if done, right, it should always be based on what you feel is your own person, and that's it. And the reason why canceling will always stick around is because it has a much simpler and timely use. Canceling in itself is just judgment. It's just judging other people based on their behavior. We judge people. We judge people for a bunch of different reasons. Some are based on logic and some not at all. Some fairly are. You know, but we're a society that craves judgment and getting the social thing right. Being able to, you know, determine when someone's behavior is appropriate or not, and then taking the right course of action. People need to know where they fit amongst the other people in the room. You know, they also want to know what is there to know about the person standing across from them. You know, what about them will make me drawn or unattracted to them? You know, as far as like me wanting to align myself with their views or their behavior and whatnot. And so we put ourselves in positions to know what's going on with others. And we try and broadcast the best versions of ourselves so that we don't maybe put doubt in people's minds about our own acceptance within a culture or society. You know, and then from there, it's just a bunch of, you know, Darwinian stuff happening. You know what I mean? Like, people are sorting and accepting and excluding and a bunch of other stuff about other people, and we sort of evolve with this, right? Like, the ways that which we judge and view others changes over time, depending on what the value systems are that we have in place. You know, canceling is just the next step of that. It's wanting to take real action after these sort of observations are made about other people, the way that we judge them in our own life, and then if we feel compelled to do something about it, that is essentially what canceling is. So, you know, Sammy, I'm going to give you another example. So let's say this hypothetical person, Sammy, who's 34 years old, and this person called a 10-year-old child, you know, like a dumb whore, and was caught on video, you know, spitting at them or something. We all agree that this is terrible behavior, right? We all agree that this is wildly inappropriate and rude and just flat out disgusting, right? And because we cannot let Sammy think that his actions aren't being judged, we must then inform Sammy that his community will gladly isolate him from the rest of us until he learns to behave how the rest of us envision, you know, how we should behave, how we envision a peaceful society. Depending on the time and space that we're talking about, the course of action that is done to this hypothetical person, Sammy, it's going to be different. Back in the day, you know, if they felt compelled to do something, Sammy might have been hung. He might have been exiled. He might have been banished from the town or whatever, right? For today, you know, I guess the equivalent could be, like, you know, he gets, people want him to deactivate his Twitter, or, you know what I mean? Or, you know, they create different little thought pieces on it, you know what I mean? To try to explain why this behavior isn't okay. And in this example, you know, it's rather obvious, right? As far as what his actions were and why we should feel that way. But our natural inclination is to try to remove that stuff from our society when it seems fit. And there may be times where, you know, we're acting hypocritically, right? There may be people who want to see action take place who may do the same thing, but they would rather much place the focus on this person because it takes it away from themselves. And the reason why there's this outrage over canceling is because, like any time period, the lines are not clearly defined, right? The ones that are there are not going to be agreed upon by everybody. And as time moves forward, and we need to assume that when time moves forward, that also means that there's a greater desire to be, I guess, progressive. You know, we see these lines being worked out in real time, you know, but they always build upon the last era or the last decade or however you want to, you know, break the time down. It's always being evolved and transformed. So what was, you know, like, okay, so in the 50s, right, it might have been outrageous to believe, you know, black kids should be in the same school as white kids, but then maybe a decade later, although not perfect and not everybody agrees to this, maybe those ideas about having that merger of black kids going to school with white kids doesn't seem as outrageous. You know, the 60s, you know, when there was uproar about black people having voting rights, by the next decade, you know, those ideas are no longer as challenging or detrimental to the way. And really, I'm talking about, like, I guess white people, but this extends to everybody, right? It's not just white people, because everybody has their own value system and they look at others to see if they match up and whatnot. But every idea that's presented within each time frame, which within each decade or however you want to break it up, initially, when you look at it, people are like, oh, this is too much or it's too little, and they just don't know where to draw the line. Maybe it challenges the way that they were raised and how they want to think about the world, so they push back on it. But given enough time, that changes. Given enough time, you know, new ideas are being worked out. Like, it may seem like we've gone too far one way or the other, but only time will tell. Some ideas will stick, the important ones, and then some will get fizzled out over time. Some, you know, there may have been an overextension on certain beliefs, and so we draw back some. Maybe, you know, yeah, that was a little bit too much. Let's reel that back some. But through every decade, it gets a refinement period, right? There's new things being added, new things taken away, new ideas being accepted. You know, we're figuring out the lines better. But those lines, even though we're getting better at it, they still change as time moves on, because the way that we want to see the world changes, the things that we will accept and the things that we will not accept, you know, they change along with it too. The social climates are different. So cancel culture lives on the idea that, you know, we need to, there's, like I said, in the earlier part of it, there's two sections. There's people who are mad about the idea of getting canceled. And then there are those who are putting real time, hours, and effort into getting other people to jump on board with canceling somebody. And I think both of those things are damaging in how we come up with real effective solutions for wanting better behavior. The people who are mad at canceling are really just mad that maybe the ways that we do it now are more, I don't know if dynamic is the right word, but there's just more ways to do it, right? And it can happen to anybody, where maybe back in the day, like, it was harder to get canceled, maybe. I don't know. I'm not too sure how to even go with that. But then you have the people who, you know, when they talk about rallying around to cancel somebody, when really, if you want to cancel somebody, what you're really doing is saying to yourself, I don't like this person's actions, and so I'm going to separate myself. Or if you feel even more compelled, I want to make sure this person should not be able to continue doing this. But other people, they may not feel compelled to do that, or they may get over it, or they may see that there's bigger problems at hand. What we're stuck in is that, you know, people feel as though they, how do I want to word this? people feel as though this is a rite of passage, that I deserve to, you know, feel free to think and feel however I want, and that it should not have any repercussions, or that I'm not doing anything that's really harmful, or that the people who are challenging me are overboard, when, listen, this is something that we're working out in real time, right? So yeah, there may be instances where you may see an article or whatever where there's outrage over something and you might think, oh, it's a little extreme. And then there's points, and we all know this, there's times where we feel like there's not enough done to somebody or some institution that did something terribly wrong, and it's sort of being brushed to the side as if, you know, whatever, that's just, it is what it is. And so, you know, with canceling, I think it comes down to establishing your own values and doing what you think is right and what's practical, and understanding that not everybody is going to agree right away. And if it's important and if it's long lasting, then as time goes on, you'll see that, you know, it sticks around. And if you truly believe in your cause, if you truly believe that we need to weed out this behavior and put more of this kind of action and these behaviors in place, then please be, you know, a major component in that. But understand that, you know, to believe that others need to also do that too, or to expect them to, or to get mad that they're not, right? I think you're getting into a little bit of a slippery slope there. But the biggest takeaway is that no matter what decade you're in, no matter what time period you're in, no matter where you are in the world, canceling, or rather, like I said before, the principle of it is judgment. Everybody judges each other. Everybody forms these ideas about what we should allow, what we shouldn't allow, right? And that'll change. So the last thing I want to talk about with cancel culture is just the basic principle of it. It's people who are now introduced to new ways of thinking, and they don't like the way that they're expected to act because they don't think that they need to act this way, partly because they've adopted new behaviors already. And, well, two things. They may not want to adapt and change to the new behaviors because they simply don't agree with it, right? Or two, they just don't want to because, you know, I don't want to call it lazy necessarily, because I don't want to put the idea out there that you need to agree and align yourself with every single new idea that may look to be progressive, because sometimes they may just not be, they might not even be reasonable or practical or what have you, right? Or they may not make sense. I'm not saying that you need to, because it's a new progressive idea, that you need to now always stay with the times. Sometimes there's things that are tried and true. Sometimes there's belief systems or perspectives that, you know what, it makes sense to keep with that rather than go with this new thing. I don't know where the lines are. I don't know how you should decide to judge that. But just as a basic principle, yeah, always have a level of, you know, always learn, but, you know, be skeptical too. You know, take everything in stride. But really, cancel culture is about people getting mad that they may have to deal with new consequences based on new expectations. And, you know, to be mad about that is to just be mad constantly, because the world is always changing. The way that we view ourselves and our relationship with the environment and the world around us is always going to change. And so if your first reaction is to push back without even thinking or reading into it, that's where you run into problems. And then on the other side of that, for the people who think that it's absolutely necessary to always find a way to, I guess, cancel or judge or whatever, without maybe taking a second to understand the context, or maybe even see if what you're trying to cancel them for is something that's worthwhile, right? To just always, you know, be self-critical too, and to not just assume that because the trend goes this way that we need to then follow that trend. Sometimes we can look at a trend and be like, you know what, maybe we should hold back on that a little bit. Maybe we should take a second to see if this is something that's really worthwhile to sort of establish within a culture or within a society. And, you know, listen, nobody knows, right? Nobody's perfect. Nobody's going to get this thing right all the time. But I think for me, I'm not really worried about the threat of cancellation or being judged in any meaningful way and having to deal with those consequences, because for two reasons. One, I'm always someone who, you know, when it comes to consequences, I'm always somebody who's like, yeah, listen, I'm going to do certain actions. I'm going to do certain things because I've thought about it and I've made that conscious choice. And what comes with that comes with that, regardless of what that may be, even if it's something in the past, like, because there's a reason why I did it. And I'm an adult. Like, you know, listen, if there's ever a point where you know, I say or do something and it's being challenged, I'm open to that criticism. I'm open to that. I'm not going to run away from it, because it's worth mentioning if it's something that's important, right? And then, you know, secondly, you know, I believe that the way that I perceive the world and my perspective is one that comes from a genuine place, but not just a genuine place, right? Like not just because my intentions are good, but I really want to live an accurate lifestyle where the values that I hold are in reflection of what's best for society. And, you know, what's best for society, I may not get that right, but I'm definitely looking around to see, okay, you know, what makes sense? You know, what values, what beliefs are for the best of everybody? You know, what makes everybody feel included? What makes them feel safe? Feel like they belong? Feel like they have value? You know, and I think if you just hold on to those qualities, right, where you make your own decisions and you're willing to deal with consequences, and then two, you're somebody who pursues the greater good and whatever that may be for the current times, right, and then even look a little bit further into the future too, right, having both, you know, a sense of reality in the now, but then looking to see, you know, how can I be better, how can I go take this perspective that I have and even advance it, right, to improve upon it. And I think if you hold those qualities, right, truly, genuinely, then you're not so much worried about cancel culture, because you understand that judgments happen regardless, and then two, you're going to be on the right side of those judgments more often than not. And if you aren't, then you have to remind yourself as an adult, or just not even as a person, right, I need to be able to look at my past and my present and judge it fairly and judge it accurately and allow others to do the same, right? Because it's not always, just because somebody judges you doesn't mean that they're right, right? But you have to be willing to take criticism and then think about it critically. Say, okay, you know what, this deserves to be criticized. It deserves to be improved upon. Or, you know what, there's a little bit of outrage over this one thing, and I don't think that what they're getting at is, you know, is right or is worthwhile, and so I won't do that. But that's up to you to decide, right? To be a good person and to think for yourself and then to deal with the ramifications of both those things, because we have no other choice. We're human beings in a society that's based around social structure, right? So you don't really have any other option but to agree on that. Or you deal with the reality of always being mad that you're being perceived, that you're being judged, and that your actions have meaning, and that the meanings that your actions have they may change depending on the time frame that you're in. So after that long, long rant, I had to sort of collect myself too. I think there's like three different sections that you're going to have here. I had to like sort of restart my thinking here. But after that long rant, you know, this started off about the Gruden files, the Gruden emails, you know, where he's getting called, or he's out here calling different people different slurs and making these, you know, harsh remarks about the characteristics of other people, of a black person specifically. Then you have this the special with Dave Chappelle and how, you know, he's always sort of in this sphere, this cycle of criticism after he drops something of comedic value. And then what those two things mean as far as what cancel culture represents, because I think those two are important when you tie in and you try to understand it better. But I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to kind of save some of the ideas. Maybe for a different one. Maybe I'll touch on this again, kind of refine the idea a little bit about cancel culture in a different podcast. But it's already getting a little late. I think this might be close to an hour. This might be my longest podcast that I've done. But I hope that, you know, maybe, hopefully, again, I'm always open. If you do listen to this, I'm always open if, you know, to any criticisms, to any, you know, if you feel any type of way about what this specific stuff in general with John Gruden and Dave Chappelle and even just canceling in general, because I know, you know, most of you, if you do listen to this, you're on Twitter, you're on Instagram and Facebook, all that, you see it play out in real time, you know. So definitely engage, think about these things. How do you feel about them? What is your opinion on this? What is your opinion on what John Gruden did? What his consequences should be, if there should be any. The same thing with Dave Chappelle, you know, and just think critically about the world around you. That's really the basis of most of these podcasts, is to think critically about the things that other people do, the things that you do, and the impact they have on the world. And with that note, after that long-winded explanation, it's the end of this podcast. Thank you if you listen all the way through. I appreciate anybody who supports. And I hope you have a good rest of your day. Have a good one. And with that, that's the end of the episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, tuning in, sharing, doing what y'all do. This wouldn't really happen without y'all, so I appreciate you continuing to support this, support me, and yeah, making this so worthwhile and rewarding. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. Thanks.